Mark Steiner, and welcome today. We're going to talk to the leaders of our Baltimore City public schools during the course of this hour. We're going to cover at least two major areas and any other area you would like to join us to talk about at 410-319-8888. You can join us here to talk to Dr. Andres Alonso, who is CEO of the Baltimore City Public School System. Also being joined in studio by Matt Hornbeck, who is principal of Hampstead Hill Academy. And Tisha Edwards will join us, who's a former principal of the Baltimore Freedom Academy, whose students, remember, participated in our Annapolis Summit. And she now runs the Bridge to Excellence program. The number here, 410-319-8888. We're going to cover a couple of pieces of territory. One we will cover is the battle over the budget, the battle over the amount of money being given to city schools and to Prince George's County schools that seem to have come out on the short end of the stick. We've covered this a few times. We covered it with Governor Martin O'Malley when we were in Annapolis, and we covered it on the show since that time and have talked about it. And there are some very issues being raised here. One guest on a show the other day saying that the Baltimore City Schools should not make this political battle. It's a dangerous political battle to make. They're going to get money in the stimulus package. Dr. Alonso and company saying, no, but that money is tied up in certain directions and you just can't, it's earmarked and you can't use it for anything you need. Is that real or not? We'll talk about that. And the question of test scores. Maryland made a big issue over Maryland being the number one public school system in the nation. Well, some people have challenged that idea about what that means in terms of other test scores that have come out, our SAT scores, and whether or not we are touting our own horn rather than dealing with the reality, objective reality of what it means to be a top education system. So 410-319-8888 is the number here. These are our schools. You should have fourth here on this hour with Dr. Andres Alonso, who runs our schools here in Baltimore City, Matt Hornbeck, principal of Hampstead Hill, Tisha Edwards, who will be joining us. And Dr. Alonso and Tisha Edwards should be in a minute. They are in traffic, but she'll be here shortly. But Matt Hornbeck's here all by himself. Matt, welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you.
Glad to be here.
So we'll talk clearly with Dr. Alonso when he gets in here about the whole question of the budgets in our schools, but I mean, a larger political question is has to do with how money gets allocated in mm-hmm. our states. And I guess there are a lot of people who, especially from Prince George's County and Baltimore City and a majority African-American areas, who take umbrage that why is it the Prince George's County and Baltimore City schools are the ones who are taking the greatest hit?
Well, and I think in both cases, both those districts serve some of the highest needs students in the state. I think it's a fundamental question of equity and adequacy and how we can, as a state, not just be number one for some students in some categories, but for all students in all categories. And the good people in schools, principals, teachers, parents working in schools in both Prince George's County and Baltimore City deserve every opportunity for success. And it's my perspective, and I think many people's perspective, that the state has never adequately funded schools in the state and met their constitutional responsibility, and that there have been huge leaps forward with Thornton and with the funding that's come to the state through the city-state partnership, to the city through the city-state partnership. But I think there's a long way to go, and we've never really seen an adequate level of funding. I think the formula fundamentally needs to be revisited. I was very heartened to hear Governor O'Malley suggest that the formula be looked at again, reopened, and this is a good time to do that. You can't ride out the recession and wait until flush times. We had a lot of years of that and didn't happen then, and we want to make sure that the formula is producing enough money equitably distributed around the state and really meeting the needs of some of our highest need populations.
Before I set the tone here, before Dr. Alonso gets here and we can have the head of the system really talk to the policy
yes.
questions that I
yes.
know I don't want to throw, make you
sure.
answer. I want you to take just a few minutes and describe what your school. I mean, you run a school called Hampstead Hill Academy.
Yes.
On the east side of Baltimore.
Yes.
Patterson Park area.
Yes.
That has probably one of the most multiracial student bodies in the city, Latino, Black, White, Native American.
Correct.
Kids from upper middle class homes and kids from homes that are some of the poorest in the city.
Yes.
And it is a school that is run as a kind of a neighborhood charter school.
Correct.
For want of a better term.
There's been a school on that city block since 1893, but yes, it is a neighborhood school, and we are a charter school, one of the first charter schools in the state, a conversion school. So we have a lot of autonomy, and we receive our funding in a way that gives us a lot of control over our budget, although to Dr. Alonzo's credit and the school district's credit, so do traditional schools this year for the first year.
Yes, they do, they're doing that now. But I'm curious how you've done something, and I want our listeners to understand this. Mm-hmm. Please join us here at 410-319-8888. It's a story you're about to hear before Dr. Alonzo comes. It's really fascinating, to me anyway, in that you have managed, in the budget you have, and in a regular Baltimore City public school,
yes,
to ensure not just the academic subjects, but that you have adequate physical education, music, art, even this incredible Beyond the Edge program in food, mm-hmm. and preparation of food and growing food and all the rest, creating kind of a program that most people said we cannot afford to have, because we have to stick to the basic reading and writing without all the fringe, or we're not going to get kids to pass the tests.
Well, at Hampstead Hill, we don't believe those things are fringe or extra.
And, I don't either. They're not
core.
Fringe.
And so we have full-time physical education teacher, full-time art, full-time orchestra, band, food. And those are choices that you make with your budget.
So what don't you do if you have to make a choice with the budget?
Well, there are, we currently don't have a longer school day, and some schools do.
How do you cram that into a school day, then?
It's a very busy full day. I mean, you're making a lot of parents and staff and some of the university folks around the nation think you need more recess, more cursive handwriting, more, you know, there are a whole lot of different things that could have dedicated minutes in the schedule each day that you just can't fit it all. One of the ways we're able to do it financially is that we're at scale, and I think...
What does that mean?
Well, if you have 100 students, it's hard to have that many resources available. If you have 200, 300, 400 students, then it is much easier. And so, and our student population is growing. As you know, a four-decade decline in enrollment was reversed this year, and the city schools have now increased enrollment, and that's one challenge to work with less money from the state and have enrollment going up. So the same thing at Hampstead Hill, where we have increasing numbers of kids, and so we are able to plan and support our programs, and we have a lot of parent support too. So when parents demand all of those things which you just ticked off, then it becomes our goal and our objective to make it happen for them. And we are pretty good at making that work. But there are countless hundreds and thousands of decisions that are made each year that are priority choices. And one of the things that Dr. Alonzo said when he gave so much control to schools in this fair student funding work is that you can't cut art, you can't cut physical education. You know, don't have those things fall to the wayside just so that you can have more of something else, that the arts and all of the other resources are very important. And so principals hear that and are doing that citywide. At Hampstead Hill, we have a very good team and a group of people who have really are not looking at the minimum they can do, but what is it we can do for kids in this neighborhood? And it's been a really rewarding experience.
I mean, it seems to me that that kind of model, I mean, every principal is going to run the school the way they see fit at the moment, mm-hmm. running their own, not they see fit completely, but mm-hmm. they have, in terms of managing their budget. But to be able to carve that out, to carve this idea out, I mean, when you just said earlier, you were alluding to the fact you don't have time to spend on cursive, you don't have time to cursive writing, you don't have time to spend on some of the other academic issues you want. I mean, to me, it also just shows how much more we need to get done.
Yes.
In city schools, how much more space there has to be,
yes,
for students to grow and learn.
Yes. Well, if you've gone and looked at the number of minutes in the school day and the number of dollars allocated and the physical plant condition of schools around the city, and the need of the student population in most cases in the city, you would see that there are phenomenal resources needed to help solve all of the challenges we face. And there are good people that stand ready to do that work, but the state needs to step up. So I think we have not had a leader like Dr. Alonzo, period, in the city schools. And so it is an exciting time to work in the city schools. And this control and autonomy schools have had is coupled with a lot of accountability as he puts together a report card for the public to see on each individual school. About a third of the principals in Baltimore City are new this year, and that's also exciting.
Join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Many of you who are listening to this program tonight are parents of students who are in school, or school teachers, have graduated from our public schools, and we're all facing the same economic dilemma here in the United States. Congress is battling over a stimulus package here in America right now. And I want to know what you think about how much that stimulus package should go to schools and what we do about our schools. And why schools like, and many of you are listening here, live in Prince George's County or Baltimore City, why those schools are getting less funding than people say they should be getting, why they're getting the majority of the cuts that other schools are not getting, and the same kind of percentage of cuts. And what should be done, and whether or not you think that this part of the stimulus package in America should go towards education, should go towards the education of our children. Is that the investment in the future we need to make? 410-319-8888 is the number here. 410-319-8888. We are facing dire situations in America, but some say the stimulus package should be something that feeds the infrastructure of America and educating our children, shoring up their schools, and building those schools to many. That is our infrastructure, the most vital part of our infrastructure. If that doesn't exist, we have no future. And I think that's – go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say one thing that I know the board in Baltimore City, the Board of School Commissioners, talked about is universal pre-kindergarten for children who are 4 years and older in the city. And you can't – you cannot come up with a better infrastructure investment than universal pre-K. I mean, it's phenomenal. Opportunity to get a real head start with students that you'll be serving for more than a decade after that. And that costs X millions of dollars. Well, that kind of thing gets tabled in the context of the cuts that are being proposed in Annapolis. And that's something I know that early ed is very near and dear to both the board's heart and Dr. Alonzo's, and that we really would use the money, I think, in ways like that that would pay off for years and decades to come. So it's been a challenge in light of losing money that we thought we had this year, and then when you look at the per pupil, there's a real worry among principals in Baltimore City, real worry that some of the cost of living increases, basic things like cost of living increases for teachers that are fundamentally needed, will be simply passed on to schools, as they should be. The money's in the schools. And then we will get not an increase in the per pupil to cover that, but actually a cut in the per pupil because of the proposals that are happening in Annapolis. And our view is that this money for these kids should not even be discussed. I mean, there ought to be kind of a proverbial sacred cow here. I mean, this is not something that ought to be on the table.
Especially for all children, but I think yes. Especially for children growing up in the poor sections of the state who need the extra kick to make it happen. We talked earlier, I'm going to open the phones here, we talked earlier before we went on the air, maybe we'll talk about it when Dr. Alonzo gets here, is that we talked about private education systems, and one of the things you said to me was the difference is in those private education systems that have progressive ways of teaching, that when those children leave the school, they go home to a house full of books and people who study and play music, and the education goes on. And because a lot of poor kids either live in single-family homes or parents are working two or three jobs in order just to make it, to put food on the table, keep a roof over the head of their children, they can't do that.
And everybody wants the same thing. They want more and better opportunities for their kids. But, yeah, time is an issue.
Let's see what the people think. 410-319-8888. It's our schools. It's our money. It's our children. 410-319-8888. BB in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Hello, Mark and Matt. This is BB Birdery from the ACLU.
Hi, BB. How are you?
Hi, BB.
I wanted to make a couple of points. One is I wanted to urge all of the callers to contact the governor and the Baltimore City legislators to urge them to oppose these cuts that have been proposed, and you can go to the ACLU Maryland website to do that. And I secondly wanted to ask Matt to comment on what might be cut in schools if these state budget cuts and the change to the Thornton formula really go through. I think Dr. Alonzo's mentioned something like $350 per child is the amount that would be represented by these state budget cuts. And could you speak to that, Matt, about how that would hit the classroom?
Yes, that would. There would be fewer teachers teaching kids in the classrooms. And that would hurt. And not only would class size go up, but we would not be able to have as many teachers in the classrooms. And I think that fundamentally some of the infrastructure would not be taken care of either. I mean, the leaky roofs would get leakier, and we want to make sure that there's that doesn't happen. But if $350 reduction per pupil would be tens of thousands of dollars and lost, in most cases, I think more than $100,000 in lots of schools if you lost $350 per pupil. And that kind of loss is going to impact instruction in deep ways, textbooks, teachers, and so on.
BB, thanks so much for calling. I want to say it's always good to hear from you and to introduce, let folks know that Dr. Andres Alonzo, CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools, and Tisha Edwards, former principal at the Baltimore Freedom Academy, who runs the Bridge to Excellence Program, and a special assistant, I have that right, Dr. Andres Alonzo. To welcome to both of you. Good to have you both
here.
Good to see you both again.
Thank you.
And before we launch into the questions I have, because I have two very large questions I want to wrestle with all of you here, and I didn't want to wrestle with them until the wrestler himself arrived. So 410-319-8888 is the number here. I asked people to call in, so let's go to another caller, then we'll jump in. And Edward in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. The question that I have actually is probably twofold. One being, do you have a sense for the bailout, or I should say the recovery plan funds, how much may be allocated to education? And then my second question would be, do you have a sense for, I heard the gentleman state that there's a per pupil calculation. How does that compare to what we pay per prisoner in our prison systems, and how do you feel about the inequity, if there is, in our investment in children versus what we're investing in our prisons?
That's a really good question. Andres, you want to jump in since you just walked through the door?
I think that that's sort of a softball. Let's start with the second one. The investment is we're investing far more on prisons than in schools right now, and that the per pupil varies throughout the country. I think our overall per pupil with all kinds of funds thrown in are somewhere between $13,000 and $14,000. While we spent, I believe, something like $27,000 a year for each person that we incarcerate. So it's quite a comparison. Clearly, we should be investing in the shallow end rather than in the deep end. The first question that you asked, I kind of forget what the first question was, the bailout.
The stimulus and how much of it's coming to education.
There is a lot of money going into education right now. It appears to be bucketed in the following areas. An increase in Title I dollars, which are dollars that go to students that are eligible for free and reduced lunch. An increase in dollars that are earmarked for students with disabilities. There is dollars as well that appear to be earmarked for school construction and repairs for projects that are ready to launch as part of this need to stimulate the economy. And what is really most sort of nebulous and possibly most significant is the fact that there's a lot of discretionary funds going to states that can potentially be used to fund education. And the amount of those dollars and how they're distributed to education is, of course, going to be part of what the priorities of the local states and hopefully stakeholders have a chance to weigh in that the dollars should go heavily towards education.
Let me jump in. Were you going to say something, Tishan? Well, I thought you were. Let me throw some questions here. We're talking with Andres Alonso, who, of course, is CEO of our city school system. Tisha Edwards is a special assistant to the CEO, is also a former principal of Baltimore Freedom Academy, whose students participated in our Annapolis summit with the governor, and they were really great there. And Matt Hornbeck is with us, principal of Hampstead Hill Academy. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Join us or write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. What's that, Andres?
And I think it's quite appropriate that Matt and Tisha are here with me today, number one, because I think they represent the future leadership of the system. People who've been in schools, who are broad-minded in terms of reform and the changes that have to take place, but who know the schools very, very well, homegrown talent. And secondly, because last year, as part of the huge shift of funds towards the school, they both had key leadership roles in that piece. Matt was the person who, in a sense, project managed the entire project. And I wanted very much for it to be a person who was in a school to really drive the process. And Tisha was the lead in terms of the professional development and the support for schools around guidance to principals.
It's good to have both of them in the studio. Yeah.
Thank you.
Let me jump into two of the thorny issues here, and then we'll go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Thorny issue number one.
There are always thorny issues with you, Mark.
It's my job. That there are people who are arguing, who are educational advocates, and people are arguing on the progressive end of the political spectrum in Annapolis, advocates as well as legislators, that city schools, that you're making a political misjudgment by going after the $23 million, by trying to take on, but it seems to be taking on, a powerful Montgomery County, which cannot be beaten in this battle over money, and that the $100 million stimulus package that might come to city schools, $93 million they're saying to $100 million may come to city schools, there may be strings attached, it may not. We don't know if there can be strings attached, and that to take this on now is a political error.
Well, can I ask you, who are these progressive people? Because I haven't heard a single one of them. So now, it sounds like you're making up this argument to create a thorny issue,
no,
Mr.
I'm
Steiner. I want names. No, I want to take down names.
You know, I can. That's what they're afraid of.
Well, then that's a good thing.
There's one more seat here.
Yeah. Let me just say that, number one, you know, I don't see this as a dichotomy where Baltimore City and Prince George are at one end in the spectrum and Montgomery County is in another. I think that this is fundamentally about priorities and educational funding how should education be funded. And it's also, from my perspective, about putting back on the table the question of adequacy that appears to have been dropped off the table in this conversation
about
cutting budgets. As in, what does it take to successfully educate a child in 21st century America in places such as Baltimore City or Prince George County or Montgomery County? I mean, there is an image of Montgomery County that no longer fits the reality. They're getting an extraordinary influx of immigrants that make the business of educating a child in Montgomery County very different than what it might have been 10, 15 years ago. So I don't think this in any way is about different jurisdictions. Of course, I need to advocate for mine because my job is to safeguard the interests of the children of Baltimore City. But I see myself very much in allegiance with Dr. Jerry Wiest around what needs to happen in education. That's number one. Secondly, the question of the $23 million for me is key because what I fear is an infusion of dollars in the next couple of years, rainmaking, because it's coming from the federal government. And then 2 years from now, when the drought begins, then what happens in terms of programs that have to be sustainable over time? So I don't see this as me strategizing politically in order to get dollars. I think that the dollars coming from the federal government are going to come regardless, because they're going to be tied to specific types of children and projects. I see this as part of a conversation that, if you remember, I began a year ago when I went to Annapolis and testified that the funding for Thornton shouldn't be changed, despite the lack of allies at that time around that conversation. I think that I have an obligation in the city to lead. And in leading, I need to put the interests of the children first, number one. Secondly, I think right always wins. And here, the argument is about what's right. As in, number one, it is unfair for Prince George County and Baltimore City. It's not just Baltimore City.
No, it's not.
To bear the large percentage of the cuts in the state of Maryland. That's number one. Secondly, I believe that the conversation has begun, has become about cutting dollars and has shifted away from the question of what are the priorities of the state and what is adequate funding for the schools. Thirdly, I am engaged in the conversation right now at the federal level about, you know, should we have more flexibility over the dollars? Because it clearly, if the dollars come with strings, they're not going to be able to make up for some of the dollars that are falling away. But looking ahead to what happens 2 years from now, the formulas and the base are what matter, because I need to be able to predict a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, how I'm going to run the school system. For me to count on rain in order to carry the school system forward for a year or two, and then 2 years from now have to lay off massive amounts of people, It's tremendously short-sighted for a leader to operate in that way. I need to have a way of building programs over time in order to carry the system forward.
But let me go to the phone here, listen, Colin, because I have a question to come back with that. But some people have been holding on for a while. I want to let them come in. I'm going to kind of follow right up again. 410-319-8888. Evelyn, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thank you.
My question is this. I no longer have kids that would have attended Baltimore City Schools. My children are 27 and 25, but they never attended Baltimore City Public Schools. They attended Catholic schools. Mm-hmm. My granddaughter now attends Catholic school, and their mothers pay, just like I did, taxes for Baltimore City Schools. There are so many kids who do not go to public school, but their parents pay taxes. Why don't you have an excess of money? What happens to the money that was never used, that I paid for my children? I don't understand why there's not an excess of money in schools, because I know so many people whose children do not go to Baltimore City Schools, but we pay taxes for Baltimore City Public School children.
I think there's a... Andres, you want to answer that question?
Well, the city has gotten dollars over time, the schools, on the basis of formulas and calculations that have been consistent over time. They depend on the numbers of students in the city schools, and they depend on the needs and categories of children in the city schools. That's what happens throughout the state. What we know for sure is that nearly 10 years ago, there was a litigation called the Bradford litigation, with plaintiffs coming out of Baltimore City that argued that the city schools had been vastly underfunded over time, that the funding for education in the state at some level discriminated against children in the city. And guess what? There was a judge that found the claim to have merit. And as a result of the claim, between 2003 and 2008, funding from the state into Baltimore City increased tremendously. The funding from the city itself has been flat for about a decade. So over a period of about 5 years, a lot of the dollars that came into the city schools from the state were coming into the city schools from the state because of findings of law and findings of political commissions that we're trying to make up for a traditional shortfall. We are now at a different stage where we're appearing to be going backwards in terms of the projections. And part of what I am pushing for is an understanding that every single we regardless of what happened before, and this happened before me, we're not what we should be. You know, half our kids or 40% of our kids don't graduate from high school. The needs are huge in the city, and we need to take account of it. The parochial schools, the independent schools, they're actually very strong in Baltimore City, and part of what we're looking at is a way to partner with each other so that we leverage each other's resources as we move forward. I mean, that's an interesting conversation. I said when I came on board that the city had an ecology when it came to education and that it was foolish to ignore what was happening with one as opposed to the other. Now, in terms of
take a short break. Yeah. Right back to finish that thought. A great deal more issues. Dr. Andres Alonso, Matt Hornbeck, Tisha Edwards, our guest. We're talking about Baltimore City schools, the budget cuts, the question of test scores. Are they really up or down? And does Maryland really have the best school systems in the country? 410-319-8888. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still there helping people during difficult times. More information is available at mecu.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're talking about, with leaders of our city schools this hour, Baltimore City Schools, talking about the budget cuts, the fight to regain the money that is threatened to be cut if the stimulus package doesn't come in. The question, of course, is even if the stimulus package does come in, will those budget cuts remain and on the stimulus package money be there? We're going to talk about that with Dr. Andres Alonso, CEO of our Baltimore City Schools, Matt Hornbeck, principal of Hampstead Hill Academy, a very important charter neighborhood charter school in our community on the east side of Baltimore. Tisha Edwards is the former principal of the Baltimore Freedom Academy, now works hand in glove with Dr. Alonso over on North Avenue. Number here is 410-319-8888. What do you think about the school cuts, about the budget cuts, about the stimulus package, about the schooling that your children get? Most of the cuts are coming in neighborhoods that listen to this station all the time, in Prince George's County and in Baltimore City. So, but you're not there. You can live anywhere and join this conversation. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Look like you're going to leap through the mic. You about to say something?
How do I pay teachers? It's you know, if there's a report that just came out about a week ago that talked about teacher quality and criticized the state of Maryland for the quality of teaching.
Right.
Right now, we are facing actually gave the state a D+ for the quality of teaching. And, you know, before we heard that we were getting cut $20-odd billion, we were already projecting a $50+ million shortfall for the second year in a row. Last year, I cut the central office by 310 positions. This year, we had already planned for a cut of roughly 150 more positions. So we're talking, Mark, about basically trying to protect the schools by cutting the central office by almost 500 positions over 2 years. That's huge. So now on top of that, you put a $27 million cut on top of it. How do I give raises to teachers over time in ways that makes us competitive with places like Baltimore County, Anne Arundel County, which can go to their county executives to get the dollars needed to attract teachers? We have a very small tax base. Our maintenance of effort from the city has been nil in terms of increases over time. It is impossible for the city to remain competitive over time if we're taking steps back every single year in terms of resources. So the aggressive nature of my argument, and I ask you for the names of those weak-kneed liberals weak-kneed Democrats out there. The aggressive nature of my argument is very much about understanding what's it going to take to put a highly qualified, effective teacher in front of every single one of my kids. A guy like Matt, who's in a fabulous school, is because of his leadership skill and the reputation of the school, can attract many, many teachers that just want to work there. But we have a lot of schools where it is a challenge to find the highly qualified teachers. And if we start paying far less than the surrounding jurisdictions, and the stimulus money cannot be used to raise teacher salaries, because then what happens 2 years from now? Somebody will come back at me and say, you gave raises that you couldn't sustain over time. That's the argument, that what needs to happen is a thorough understanding of what's gonna take to make the school system competitive over time.
What's the argument to be made? Let's say we talked about before you got here. Matt Hornbeck and I were talking about, we're touching on the edges of talking about the question of what it takes to make the city schools work. I said, from something Matt had said earlier, but I was saying that kids who go to private schools, and they, whether it's Waldorf school that I was talking to him about and the kind of education they have and how kids really excel at Waldorf school later, even they don't learn how to read until the second grade, and they do tactile things, they learn math principles, very limited math principles, so they can really grow and understand concepts, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things that happens in those schools is that children go home from those schools to homes that have libraries in the basement, musical instruments, piano teachers waiting to see them, and the rest. And that's real. And that's a good thing for those children. So the question is, we are facing a economic recession, some say on the verge of depression in America. Budgets are being cut right and left all over the state and the country. So A, I want you, the three of you, here for a second with the listeners, to challenge them and justify why city schools should not be cut, along with everyone else that has to take a cut in the times that we're facing. That's the question people are going to. That's what's going to get thrown back, I think, in the face of city schools or any other schools who complain about cuts they receive.
Well, first of all, I don't think it's that city schools doesn't understand that we are in an economic recession and that there will inevitably be cuts. I think the question is, what is the degree of those cuts, and this issue of adequacy. The fundamental question of what does it take to educate a child, and whether that be a child with special needs, whether that be a child who is a second English language learner, or whether that is a child who's coming from a economically distressed household. All of those things complicate the educational process. And city schools has a great challenge ahead of it in terms of working with some of those families who are being hurt the most by the economic recession. And so it's not that we don't want to bear our share, but we definitely should not have to be penalized or carry the burden for other jurisdictions. I think it would be egregious if we as a school system didn't stand up for our children and stand up for our families who are working very hard and who need to be a part of the 21st century economy. This situation can have long lasting impact in this community. This is not about just this year's budget. The inability for us to educate our children could have a long impact in Baltimore City and the state. And so this is not a short-sighted situation. So we have a responsibility to advocate for our children and our families, and you're not going to get anyone at this table to apologize.
We also have some momentum. I mean, we've got, and correct me, Dr. Alonzo, if I'm wrong, but did the elementary schools in Baltimore City for the first time meet AYP?
And the high schools.
And the high schools.
AYP means what?
Adequate Yearly Progress, and so meeting all the state, the goals, that the academic goals that the state sets. And enrollment's up for the first time in 40 years, and schools have more autonomy, and those are huge hits. And so to be on a roll and to have lots of good things happening in the city, and then to have the state come in and say, this is not a priority, schools and education are a priority. When there was this piece out just now that the money that's been spent for every additional $1,000 spent per student, there was a significant increase in pass rates for reading and math. And the improvement was twice as great for middle school students as those in elementary grades. And this investment that the state's made over the years should not and cannot go away. I mean,
But the question I still have, though, I think people would ask the question, then, when you have a $1 billion state deficit, and perhaps growing.
They're making choices.
So where would you make the choice instead? And when I asked you that question one day, when this first started, Andres, I wrote you an email saying, where would you make the cut? You said, anywhere else but not in education, is what you wrote back to me.
Well, a couple of things. I'm going to say the same thing again. But first of all, let us say that everybody around the table does understand that there are really difficult choices that the administration needs to make. And somebody's going to be feel that they're being shortchanged in this process, and we do understand that. There is one affirmative obligation for the legislature in the Maryland State Constitution. It's not to provide transportation. It's not to do anything other than provide an adequate education for children. So in this conversation, I think that we can all agree without apology that regardless of what happens, education has to be adequately funded. That's number one. Secondly, it is true that for the first time in a very, very long time, the conversation about the schools of Baltimore City, troubled though they remain, it's no longer solely a conversation about decay and about failure, but it's very much a conversation about hope. Mm-hmm. It is ironic that at this point, where the city had double-digit increases in reading, since you're going to get into the outcome conversation next, where we had the highest graduation rate, the lowest dropout rate, where the number of children passing the HSA, it's getting lost in the conversation that the demands being placed on students and on school systems are increasing yearly. At this point, the resources begin to dry. And I have always said that it is not about the money. This is what makes my stance in this conversation interesting in terms of our past conversations, because you have also heard me say that I feel that it is about people, it is about families coming together with schools, it is about schools making hard choices as well. But without the dollars, Matt is right. I cannot provide universal pre-K. We lose the middle class, and we don't provide it for many poor parents who don't have pre-K. I cannot provide vocational education, even though many, many of our children at the age of 13 and 14 begin to become disengaged. I cannot compete for teachers. So there are really practical implications that are not abstract in terms of what we're going to do or not do. Leaving all that aside, regardless of what happens, the school system will do better this year, next year, the year after that, because there are no excuses. However, in the context of what happens next, if I have to cut $27 million, I'm going to cut from some places and not from others. I'm not going to cut special education, no matter what happens. In the same way, my position is that the state should cut from everywhere other than from education in direct aid, because there's a lot of word games going on about whether there's an increase or not. There's a cut in direct aid, number one.
Right.
And then secondly, the fact that the two poorest jurisdictions in the state are bearing almost 60% of the extent of the cut is not right. Something's wrong with the formulas, the way that they're being proposed. And I'm incredibly thankful that the governor withdrew the proposal, because my hope is that in the way that intelligent people, when issues come to the table, figure out a way to solve them in a different way. My hope is that there is going to be a solution that doesn't penalize the two poorest jurisdictions in the state.
410-319-8888. It is your schools. It are our children. These are your jobs. This is our future. What do you think? Whether you live in Baltimore City, Prince George's County, Baltimore County, on the road in Howard County, Anne Arundel County, join us with your thoughts about our schools. We talk with Dr. Andres Alonso, CEO of our city schools here in Baltimore City, where these studios are, Matt Hornbeck, principal of Hampstead Hill Academy, Tisha Edwards, former principal of the Baltimore Freedom Academy, who runs the Bridge to Excellence program, and special assistant to Dr. Alonso. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Cuts are coming from everywhere. Schools are being cut in the largest way. What are your thoughts about that? 410-319-8888. So let me just kind of maneuver here to a different place. One of the issues that came up was I left my notes out and there they are. Where are they? I think I have them in my head anyway. Thank you, Andres. One of the issues that came out forcefully during my Annapolis summit with the governor was how Maryland is the number one public school system in the state. The media, of course, that was challenged. Was challenged because of the test results that we used weren't the real test results. That we submitted our results from our state assessment test, as every other state did, which made us look really shining, but then other people began to ask questions. Reports came out recently saying that the way we manage our teachers, it puts us in a and it gave us a D+ in that category, that the teachers get tenure too fast, that we don't control that system in a strong enough way. This morning in the Sun, what's left of it. Bob Embry wrote, and there's some great reporters there, I would say. It's just getting very small. It doesn't take long to read. But Bob Embry wrote in the letters to the editor section today that the performance that they were basing things on was our state assessments of our own school, Maryland State Assessment Tests, and that the NAP, which is the National Assessment of Education Progress, where our test put 86% of our students in the state at proficient or above in the fourth grade, and their test, their survey says one-third of Maryland's fourth graders have proficiency level according to their tests, and that we only rank 14th when it comes to graduates going to college in the country, and that our SAT scores are going down, not up. So what are we really testing our kids adequately to really know what they're learning? And you can tie that into money if you like, but who would like to grab this one first? Then we're going to go right to the phones to Robert and Karen who are dying to get in this conversation.
Well, the one thing I would say is that in terms of testing our kids right, which is the last part of your question there, in math, for example, we I think are not doing well by any international standard, and NAEP, I guess, is maybe the gold standard here in the United States. But we teach as many as 40 skills a year for a decade when kids are in grammar school and secondary school. And in other countries that do remarkably well and are graduating engineers and, you know, the equivalent of National Merit semifinalists and Westinghouse scholars and Intel scholars, what they do in math is teach very few skills, 6 or 7 skills, 4 or 5 skills a year, and teach them really deeply. So there's this fundamental understanding of math, and that's what's tested there. And here we're testing things, I think, in reading and math, which at the state level is widely varies from state to state. And in the context of Maryland, you can see the NAEP scores not supporting what the state test scores support.
This begs a question. I do want to get right to the phones here because people are calling in and want them to have a chance to question and ask you all questions here. But this begs a question. And while we're spending time, not saying that you should not spend time, in Annapolis fighting for the money for Baltimore City schools and for our children in the city and in Prince George's County who need longer school days and more books and more and better paid teachers and all the rest, which you'll never hear me saying no to.
Well, it sounds like you'd like that's the direction you're you know, all but, lapsed liberals, there's nothing worse than a lapsed liberal.
You're talking to me?
Yeah.
No, you're not talking to me. I can't
lapsed 60s revolutionary idealist.
Now he wants to
put a line in the sand
table.
Right there.
So we can sell this.
The man went to Cuba in the 60s. He's making pilgrimages to where? North Korea?
We can settle this outside after class.
Okay.
So the question is, are we Should we be fighting for the right and ability to teach our students in a different way?
Of course.
In other words, what I'm saying is, if what's happening overseas, what's happening in a lot of private schools, is we are teaching children conceptually about mathematics rather than trying to teach them 40 lessons, and if we are teaching students in private schools the not just how to read, but to love reading and learn from reading, which we don't do, we can't do in public schools because of the tests, are we making a mistake, and why aren't we hearing the voices fundamentally fighting against that rule of education?
I think that there are a lot of voices over the past few years that have been in vain against No Child Left Behind and the focus on accountability and testing. I mean, it's been hard to get a word in the discussion because it's been so noisy on that score. There are plenty, I went to forums when I first got to Baltimore, and every single forum that I went to in the community forums where people were saying, this is too much testing, you need to be doing XYZ. What is interesting about No Child Left Behind is that No Child Left Behind is tremendously agnostic about what should be happening in the classroom. It is schools and districts that interpret what No Child Left Behind is calling for to narrow instruction to be about math and literacy only, and to make it all encompassing across skills rather than decide this is our stake in the game in terms of what we want to teach children. So there is that aspect of it. The second piece, and I go back to the question about Maryland being number one. Maryland didn't declare itself to be number one. There was a study that found Maryland to be
Education
number one.
Week.
Now,
right.
The study might be imperfect, which shows you how problematic education is in America as a whole. If what Bob is saying in the, by the way, I don't know if Bob listens to this radio station.
I think he does.
Hi, Bob. If Maryland is number one and Bob is right, then the problem is in many other places, not just in Maryland.
I agree.
It argues for not for fewer resources, it argues for more.
Greater
and
resources.
By the way, part of the reason why Maryland got to be number one is because Baltimore City rose in the past couple of years. Maryland was number three the last time that the study took place. One of the things that I did when I got on board, we're going to be measured in NAEP, specifically and transparently against other urban cities for the first time, because we requested that Baltimore be not part of the aggregated Maryland score, but it be disaggregated so that it could compare itself to L.A., to Detroit, to New York,
all schools
to
are just
D.C.,
select schools.
Boston. But it's a sample. NAEP mm-hmm. is always a sample
Yours
of kids.
Yours is one of them, right?
Yes.
But it's a sample
right.
across
not
the
all
district.
Fourth grade.
Across
it's,
the district.
It's across the district.
Oh, I see.
But
right.
part of the reason why I asked for that is because part of what we wanted to see is how did we measure against not Montgomery County and Anne Arundel,
but other urban
but
school systems.
Against the nation as a whole. How do we measure ourselves?
I like that. Right. And yes, as I was going to Cuba, he was leaving. 410-319-8888. And Robert in Baltimore, you're on the air. Robert, you're on the air.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, Mark.
Good evening.
Good evening, Dr. Alonzo. And good evening, Baltimore. And I just wanted to say to Dr. Alonzo, thank you for the things that you have done. And I feel that in this city, we focus a lot on the problems that we have and not enough on the accomplishments that we've made. And I actually had the opportunity of meeting Dr. Longo at a forum that we had with the University System of Maryland, which was comprised of MSDE and every other state department that had their hands in education. And what I feel and what I see from Baltimore City, because I grew up in Baltimore City and I was educated here and I still am. I was a student at Coppin State University and I'm a student at University of Baltimore. And I feel that we are focusing too much on charter schools, and it's getting to the point where it feels more like education is being outsourced. And not enough responsibility is placed not just on Baltimore City Public School System, but on MSDE and Dr. Nancy Grasmick. And I feel that the flame should be held under her feet a little bit more, and I respect her for what she does. I love her as a woman, but the job title that she holds, I feel that she's not accountable enough from the MSDE for what's happening in Baltimore City. And in regards to the budget, if we take a look at the gains that we have made in education for Baltimore City students, it's ludicrous to cut the budget or even to consider cutting the budget or even freezing the budget at where it's at when we've made tremendous gains
okay.
in our education system in Maryland. And that's all that I wanted to say.
Thank you, Robert.
And one little thing about charters. Charters are public schools. We've been chartering schools in Baltimore at a greater rate than throughout the state, in part because we want to give options to parents and kids. So unlike in other places where charters sort of stand on the side, here in Baltimore, they're part of my meetings. I work with them every single week. One of my principals here in this panel is the principal of a charter school that used to be a traditional school and converted. I don't see a difference. I think of good schools and schools that need to become good, and good schools that need to become great. And it's because of the way we're working in the system right now, principals have more or less the same options, whether they're charters or not. If you're a principal in a traditional school, you control almost 70% of your budget. So it's really about pushing schools to define for themselves what they want to be. But other than that, Robert, I couldn't possibly agree more with what you said at the end. So I'm just highlighting that I don't see the difference between charters and traditional schools. I think that schools should have options and parents should have options too.
4103, we can't take more calls. Is it time to close up? It's time to close up this thing. I didn't realize that. This clock is a little off, but I'm maybe as off as I am. Dr. Andres Alonso, Matt Hornbeck, T.J. Edwards, pleasure to see all three of you. Thank you so much
Thank
for coming
you.
Today. We'll have them back, and we'll continue our conversation about the future of education in schools. Reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This month is the travel issue, available at over 800 locations and at urbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. We are produced by Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips, engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our interns are Christina Arison, Judith Lloyd, and Brian Boone. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and to podcast any of our past shows and hear additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.